server side and server to server data collection is not meant to be a workaround for privacy and consent considerations. If you are sending data that falls underneath privacy and consent regulatory schemas via server to server and server setting, you still need the appropriate level of consent. That would be required for doing it via a tag. And so if you're not securing that consent, and in fact, you will, if you read the policies around it, you would be in violation of Meta's policies if you're using Facebook Conversion API or CAPI. If you're trying to use CAPI to circumvent privacy and consent, you're not only are you on the wrong side of the regulation, you're also on the wrong side of Meta's own stated policy. If you try and use enhanced conversions within the Google ecosystem, again, to send information without user consent, you're on the wrong side of the regulation. You're on the wrong side of the regulation. Two, you're on the wrong side of Google's own stated policies, right? So. Get ready to deep dive into the world of digital transformation, where we explore the latest trends, innovations, and challenges shaking up industries. Join us as we decode the secrets behind successful digital strategies and hear from experts who are at the forefront of disrupting the status quo. In each episode, we'll unravel the mysteries of the digital realm and uncover the hidden opportunities that lie within. From artificial intelligence to blockchain, from automation to cybersecurity, we'll leave no digital stone unturned. But hold on tight, because this podcast isn't your average tech talk. We're injecting a hefty dose of wit and humor into every episode, making learning about digital transformation an absolute blast. So if you're ready to embrace the digital revolution with a smile on your face, tune in to the Digital Disruption Podcast and get ready to be entertained, informed, and inspired. Don't miss out on the fun. Subscribe now and join us on this wild digital journey.
Hello, good morning, Patrick. How are you doing?
Good evening, Daoud. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm all good. Got a question for you.
Sure.
Have you read the Divine Comedy?
I have when I was a young man in my undergraduate days of college. Indeed, I have.
So you remember Dante talking about the deepest part of hell? Where people were not asking for consent.
I do indeed. I think the companies not asking for user consent were definitely in the deepest rung of hell, as I recall.
Hopefully they're cooking. Or like the meme like to say, let him cook. And
Maybe
then
they
it
were
reaches
cooking
the
right next to the burnt third-party cookies.
Yeah, may they rest in peace, or I mean, rest in agony then. They deserve the agony.
Oh boy.
So my other question would be, for the people who would love to collect customer data and like ask for consent, is not the banner enough?
Well, the consent banner is enough with a heavy caveat of if. If and only if if it's implemented properly, as most global brands are already aware, there's it's not simply a matter of complying with a single jurisdiction, one regulation, one consent requirement. If you're a global brand, you essentially have kind of two, I guess, two broad options. Well, there's three options. You can do nothing and take your chances with both legitimate and nuisance lawsuits. And you may or may not be in business this time next year if you start getting penalized. But the two broad compliant approaches would be you can set up your consent banner and your measurement and collection practices for each individual jurisdiction in which you do business and have visitors to your website. So that means having geographic specific templates that behave differently. For example, a user in California versus, say, a user in the EU region. And then you have to, in addition to setting up the banner, then you have to have your data collection practices match the level of consent that that user has given. And in some jurisdictions, the person has to have the ability to opt out. So you can collect data if they have not explicitly opted out, as long as everything else is compliant. And in some markets, like in the EU, then the person should have actually explicitly have given you permission before you collect the data. So the banner can be sufficient with that big, huge, gigantic if if everything is configured.
If everything is configured, if it's configured right.
And the interesting thing is the landscape has changed so much. It's not just the consent piece that's getting people in trouble and getting big fines. Really, we're in the age of now of where you actually are starting to see a fair number of penalties assessed against companies, class action lawsuits, so enforcement actions. We're definitely in the age of enforcement. We're no longer in the age of, just, threat. We're definitely in the age of enforcement. We're also seeing much more activism, pursuing issues of data privacy and, data security. So, if you have, even if you have permission to collect people's data, you still have to be a good steward of that data, right? So you have to exercise due diligence in terms of that your data storage systems are secure, that you're not either intentionally or unintentionally allowing data leakage, right? Of if you, especially if you're in a sensitive industry, fintech, financial services, healthcare, right? Then you actually have additional layers of regulatory and legal of how you protect user data. And so if you, through your own kind of sort of complacency or I guess from a legal sense, if you're found negligent, right? That is you sort of grossly, abdicated your responsibility in some way, right? To the point of negligence, right? You can end up on the wrong side of the FTC in the United States due for data breaches. There's actually quite a few active enforcement actions against a number of companies that people would definitely recognize the names of due to data breaches. So, the banner, I guess, the banner is sufficient.
Yeah,
If.
kind of.
Yeah,
Every marketer's favorite answer. It is always, well, it depends.
yeah. So
I
the
mean,
consultant's answer is it depends. And of course, we're not in the business of being lawyers.
nope.
So we don't want to tell anybody what's, down to the minute details, what is, compliant or not. You need to consult with your own governance, compliance, and legal counsel to determine that. But we're just kind of sharing the industry information, what the emergent best practices are right around. I mean, a consent management tool is probably the easiest way to at least have the infrastructure in place to comply. But then,
Yeah.
what full compliance with the law looks like, that you got to discuss with your lawyers and your own internal compliance people to make sure
But
you, yeah.
I think like a consent management platform should be like taking you some way, like to cover your bases.
Yes.
Because like they sell the services of compliancy, like being compliant. So they have the knowledge of pretty much every regulation that is existent out there. And this
Yes.
is what they do. So I think that, signing up and using a consent management platform should be the end of your headache. And there is an asterisk. It is the implementation of that consent management platform, which pretty much a lot of people get wrong. It's not just the banner, Yes, the consent
Yes.
management platform will absolutely help you stay compliant with every regulation that has gone out or will be going out. It is their job, but it is your job to make sure that the implementation is actually correct. Like you're
Yes.
implementing the right tags, implementing the right stuff. So how do you do that? Like how is the insurance of the implementation is something that you can get to and then QA maybe? I mean, the
Yeah,
best
I mean, I
answer
think.
is, yeah, you can talk to us and at eSense, and we will help you absolutely implement a consent management platforms. This is a company plug.
Yeah,
But
well, yeah, I mean, not to crassly sell services or products, but yeah, I mean, you either need competent people in-house or you need a competent vendor to help you. There's no doubt about it, right? You need the
exactly.
implementation does matter here. So how the tool is an enabling technology, which means it will enable you to succeed or fail. So implementing these tools correctly matters. And an important thing too is, so the consent tools, they capture a timestamped record, right, of a user's consent decisions. It presents them with all the information they need to make an informed opt-in or opt-out decision, right? And it should give them an appropriate level of granularity for different types of tracking, different type of cookies, et cetera. But once they've made those selections, then you have a set of consent signals, right? This person has opted into, right? There's only the strictly necessary. So you can't do any other, kind of tracking, right? All those signals are now available to you. Here's where the catch is. If you don't have your tagging, your data collection, listening for those signals before data collection happens, you're already on the wrong side of consent management, right? So the big thing for a successful consent management is, one, giving users the right to give you those signals, to choose what you collect and store about them, and then having your actual data collection practices respond to and respect those signals, right? Those are the two key components there. And that's probably that second piece is where a lot of our organizations sort of drop the ball, is ensuring that all of your tagging triggers and the data collection that you do responds to those signals. And that's where having some help internally or externally with somebody who's really, like knows what they're doing to really tailor those triggers and the data collection rules. There's certain data you could collect. I mean, the more depending how sophisticated you want to get, right? There is data you can collect that is not personal in nature, that doesn't require consent. So you can actually tailor. And this was sort of the crux behind like Google's consent mode as well, right? This kind of degradable tracking, right? Where you can sort of send partial signals for unconsented users that don't involve any personal data, or any user level data. I should, be a little more accurate there. So that's the big piece, right? Is just making sure your data collection, data storage actually match what you give users the ability to tell you, and that you're legally required to give users the ability to tell you. So respect. The only way you can respect those consent signals is by adjusting your tracking to take them into consideration. Period. Right. So, I was going to say, I think we skipped forward too. So there's two broad to circle back to the beginning. Oh, and by the way, I think we've had guests the last 2 weeks, right? So we haven't talked in a while. So
we had Yigit last week with Ahmed, and we had Faraz the week before. So I was missing for a couple of weeks, but here I am back again.
Yeah. So anyway, it's good to be back in the seat with my old podcast pal. We'll have guests going forward here and there. So going forward, we'll have a mix of you and I laughing and informing and then guests on, also hopefully having as good a time as we have. So back to the earlier, there's two broad ways. So you can take two approaches. You can implement your consent management and tailor it to each jurisdiction, right? So you can have geographic templates for every jurisdiction. The other kind of broad approach would be, okay, you can say, I really take user privacy and consent seriously. It's a matter of dignity for users to be able to tell me what I should and shouldn't do with their data. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to go for the most conservative jurisdiction there is that, you know, has the most protections for user privacy. And I'm just going to proactively allow, you know, give that same level of privacy consent requirement to all my users, right? So I'm going to have one template, and that template is always going to be the most conservative sort of regulatory schema, right? Or you could say, if depending on how you think of it politically, right, you could say the most aggressive privacy consent. What I mean is, you could take the most stringent privacy and consent requirements. So find the most stringent jurisdiction and then apply that for all your users. Well, so what's the benefit of that? Well, now you have one template. The other benefit is now you can, with a straight face, say to all of your customers, we respect your, you know, privacy. We respect your right to give us consent. We do think it's, you know, we take it seriously. And so that's the approach we're going to take. What's the downside of that? Your data collection will be lower than it would be with a geographic specific template. You know, just you'd have to be mindful of the fact that you will be losing out on some data collection for both, you know, media data, audience data, behavioral analytics data, right? So you should plan on a higher, if you were to sort of take people who did not explicitly opt in, as well as people who have explicitly opted out, that together would equate to what you know, if that's somewhere between 25 and 30%, then you're going to be missing, you know, in aggregate, 25 to 30% of data collection, right? But,
well,
yeah.
Okay. Now I wanted to, I want to ask something, but not to cut you off. Continue.
Oh, no. I mean, just, I do think, you know, taking that kind of conservative approach, it means like, it means you're not chasing regulations. It means you're kind of taking that most stringent standard and saying, you know, really all my users are entitled to this level of privacy and consent. I kind of like it. But all of the, you know, you do have to be mindful of the implications for data collection.
Okay. I want to let the intrusive thoughts win for once in their life and say, act like a pisky customer, client, like company. And say, well, you know, how are the regulators going to find that I'm not really collecting my customers' data rights? Like, how would they know?
Yeah, for one thing, if you do get subjected to a lawsuit, there will be a discovery process in which your data will likely be actually scrutinized. So you know, unless you have a team of low-paid interns shredding documents, you know, and disappearing digital data footprints, which is a even, you know, larger crime and certainly ethically questionable, If you do become subject of a lawsuit, somebody will find out whether you've been collecting data you shouldn't. Also, it's really easy to use browser-based tools to kind of look at what pixels are firing on a web page. Take a archive of what pixels were firing on a given day and time. You could actually, record that entire, browser session you did and all of the pixels that fired. So this is not, I mean, a true digital activist who wants to show the world what data you're collecting about a user can easily reveal this about you. Oh, yeah.
How easy is it for like someone like me, let's say, who is kind of like on the internet for a while but does not know much about consent management? How can I know if a company is following the regulations or not?
Yeah, so go on a company's website and just do any selection of consent that you want us to select. And so if you wanted to really see what's going on, the easiest thing to do would be reject all. So only strictly necessary, cookies should
Cookies,
be
yeah.
getting set, right? And then open your developer tools or use a browser extension like an Omnibug or you could go directly into the network tab of your developer tools, and then just start surfing around and loading pages. Maybe you wanted to place an order. You can even see what's getting sent with when you place an order. But yeah, just look what pixels are firing. You can literally see every pixel that's firing. So if you have given no consent and you're seeing things like Meta and Google Ads and Google Analytics and TikTok and Snapchat and anything else, well, then somebody's collecting data they shouldn't be collecting about you.
And how do I go from there? Like, how do I report it? I mean, for companies, I think, we're discussing it from the client, like from the customer's, like the person who's visiting your website standpoint, just to show you that you're not above the law, my friend, and you're not as pesky as you think you are. If you're collecting data, we know. And once we know, it's your butt on the line. It's a hefty fine that's coming your way. So do I just report it and that's it?
That's a good question. And not being on the enforcement side of these things, I don't know what all the mechanisms are. So if you feel like you've truly been injured by this practice and you have some, I think, well, one, it is going to depend on jurisdiction, right? Like if you
Yeah.
individually wanted to sue a company, like a civil lawsuit, right? You would have to allege, in the US, you would have to allege some real harm that you've suffered because of this tracking, right? And some fancy lawyer could easily kind of help you craft what that harm looks like, right? But then, so then you would have
Yeah.
to file a lawsuit, making the allegation of what the harm is, and then you'd have to be suing for, you'd want to recoup some damages based on that harm that you've suffered. So that would be a civil suit. But then, right, like most of these jurisdictions also have like enforcement. Like, so for example, right, under GDPR, right, there's in, like the governing bodies can actually inflict pet, like, right, if they can if they can penalize you as a matter of enforcement of these regulations, right? So if you violate these regulations, you can be fined regardless if somebody individually sues you or not, right? So and this our colleague over in the EU, he just published a blog post on this in terms of some of the changing European regulations. And it's interesting, like the Digital Markets Act, it actually is shifting some of the burden of the sort of privacy consent and security, it's shifting some of this to the level at the level almost of internet infrastructure, right? It's making these kind of core platform services or the gate, what they call the gatekeeper companies, it's really making them responsible for a great deal of this sort of privacy and consent requirement compliance. So I think that the landscape in Europe is, it's really changing pretty significantly. And they can the enforcement penalties there, it's very stiff penalties. It's something like 10% of global annual revenue you can be penalized for failing to meet these burdens. And I think it's up to 20% for repeat violations. Now, these gatekeeper companies are, what you would expect them to be: Microsoft, Meta, Alphabet, Amazon,
Amazon.
ByteDance, who owns TikTok, and Apple, right? So this Digital Markets Act it's not likely to, like, these kind of penalties are not going to, impact your sort of mom and pop business, right? Doing e-commerce, an e-commerce shop on Shopify, right? These are really kind of at the internet sort of pipelines, in internet infrastructure level. But nevertheless, it should be a really telltale sign of how the industry is changing, right? And it also is also a strong, I would think it's a strong leading indicator of why we're already seeing all of these proactive industry responses, right, to privacy and consent. It's also the fact that the burden is being placed on those companies, it should be a strong leading indicator that there will be more proactive industry responses by which these large gatekeepers attempt to insulate themselves from risk. So you will likely see more ITP, ETP, ATT, third-party cookie deprecation. You will see likely see more of that to come. So browsers, apps, the kind of framework of how users interact with the internet, there will likely be increasing privacy protecting functionality built into those. Or to put it in the negative, there will be fewer ways to measure and collect personally identified personal information in those tools. Yeah. Going forward. And it's already becoming more and more restrictive. It will likely become more so.
What to do?
It's interesting. I mean, one, just accept the fact that privacy and consent are part of customer expectations, and it's part of a regulatory framework. It's part of, so we have to adjust as marketers, as e-commerce platforms, as B2B marketers. Like, we have to respond, and we should respect these things. We've talked about that before. I think having as durable, reliable infrastructure as possible in place matters, which I know, we talked ahead of this recording this, but we wanted to talk about server-side tagging, right? So, which you might be asking yourself, well, what's the relationship to privacy and consent? Well, for one thing, certain kinds of technology that has impacted data collection for a long time already, like things like ad blockers, right? Ad blocking technology also impacts data measurement, data collection, kind of almost as an artifact, as a byproduct. Things like server-side tagging allows you to send, and server-side tagging of one kind or another, or let's say server-to-server data collection, has been in place for a while. So the diff and just to, I guess to differentiate it from client-side data collection, right, is like when you visit a website and a piece of JavaScript snippet with a Google endpoint or a Meta endpoint, right? It fires that pixel with some, query string parameters that collect the actual data. So it's actually sending from the browser, right? That's the client side tracking. So if that snippet gets blocked, no data collection is happening, regardless of if a user gave you consent or didn't give you consent. If that snippet is blocked, no data collection happens, right? Or if it fails to load, whatever reason, that if in the case of browser side tracking, client side tracking, that snippet has to fire and receive a success, you know, a response code that is successful in order for that data collection to happen. On the server-to-server piece or server-side tagging, the data collection is sent directly, either in some cases it can be sent directly from your own server to the end server, so that there's never that snippet firing on the actual browser itself, right? So things like an ad blocking script, you know, ad blockers are not going to prevent that from happening, right? So as long as you have the appropriate, you know, credential, API key, token, whatever the mechanism is for allowing you to make that server-to-server call, if that call is successful, the data collection is successful, right? So like affiliate programs have been using this technology for a long time, these po called, you know, postbacks, right? This allows affiliates, you know, to get credit for the, you know, transactions or leads that they're generating, right? So this is not a new practice by any means. It has become more important for some platforms where in the past it may not have been as crucial, you know, that we're more reliant on client-side tagging. But and then in this case of server-side tagging, this is where well, I'll use a couple different examples, but let's just use like a server-side Google Tag Manager. So in this case, you create in cloud, you create a server that becomes now your tagging server, and you actually implement a Google Tag Manager server-side container in the cloud on in your server. You point to a newly registered subdomain, Credible A record. You point the DNS to a subdomain of your main website. So it could be you know, trk.example.com, right? And so now when you have in your now you have a Google Tag Manager container on your website as well, but rather than send when you fire tags, rather than sending those tags to the endpoint of the data destination, you update those tags, right? Now they're firing to now your server domain is the actual endpoint for your tagging. So the data collection goes from the browser to the server, and then it goes from the server to the data destination. That's one way to do it. You can also do, you can have all your data layer variables, you can have custom events firing on your website, and you could basically collect, you could do one data collection that you send, you know, so every, let's say every custom event that fires, add to cart, checkout, purchase, right? And then all of the item data, all of the user data, all of the event metadata, right? Send that data in one call to your Google server. And then from there, you could write custom code and you could send that, basically parse that data from that one custom event that gets sent to Google Cloud Server. And now you could send that data, you could basically parse it, transform it into the appropriate data collection component for every platform you want to send that data to. And then from the cloud, you can write the custom code. In some cases, there are existing clients that can do it automatically, like say for Google Analytics or for Google Ads, but you might need to write custom code in some cases. But now you can take, so you can collect the data once from your website or from your app, and you could send it to 20 different data destinations or 30. You could send that data to Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, Snapchat, Meta, Display and Video 360, Search Ads 360, right? You can send it. And that's the beauty of the server-side tagging approach, right? If you really implement it strongly, you can do one data collection event from the website or app, And then you can send that data to as many places as you want. I mean, Segment.io, they've done this really well for a while. They have a number, right? You can just have one collection and then send it. MetaRouter is another company that does this really well. Their technology is awesome. And the benefit there is also on-site performance, right? Rather than having this massive tag bloat, having a huge amount of client-side tags firing, you have one tag fire, right? One time, collect that data, and then now all of the rest of the pushing of that data happens outside the context of your browser or your app. It's really cool. Now, here's the hitch. That server-side tagging or server-to-server data, it's much harder for somebody to see that happening because it's not happening on the client itself, right? But it does not alleviate you as an advertiser, as a company, of the requirement to have the required privacy and consent considerations met. So let's just let me try to say this differently. Server to server and server side data collection practices, that is a method of collecting data. It is more robust than browser side or client side tagging. It is 100%, it is more robust. There's no doubt about it. It's more reliable. There are technologies that block tag based data collection that do not block server to server data collection. It is definitively not intended to be a workaround for privacy and consent considerations. I'll say it one more time. Server side and server to server data collection is not meant to be a workaround for privacy and consent considerations. If you are sending data that falls underneath privacy and consent regulatory schemas via server to server and server setting, you still need the appropriate level of consent that would be required for doing it via a tag. And so if you're not securing that consent, and in fact, if you read the policies around it, you would be in violation of Meta's policies if you're using Facebook Conversion API or CAPI. If you're trying to use CAPI to circumvent privacy and consent, not only are you on the wrong side of the regulation, you're also on the wrong side of Meta's own stated policy. If you try and use enhanced conversions within the Google ecosystem, again, to send information without user consent, you're on the wrong side of the regulation. You're on the wrong side of the regulation. Two, you're on the wrong side of Google's own stated policies, right? So just keep this in mind. This is a server-side tagging or server-to-server methodologies in general. They will make data collection more robust. We are recommending people to move towards these types of implementations because it is a better infrastructure. It's more robust future-facing. We are not recommending people do this to circumvent privacy and consent and data security considerations by any stretch of the imagination. Just keep that in mind. I think we started the top of the call with a Dante allegory reference to the
We're
Dante's
wrapping it up
Inferno.
with how to circumstance the privacy laws.
Yeah, we don't want anybody to end up in the digital ninth circle of hell by any means, and we're here to help guide you away from that, actually.
Well, I think we covered it all. Do you have anything else before we close out?
No, I don't think so. I think like I said, it's good to be back with the original gang here, and we'll have some upcoming guests in the next few weeks. So we'll be popping in and out, but it's always good when we can connect.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to this episode. Well, we'll see you guys in the next week of the Digital Disruption Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in, and c'est la vie.
's a wrap for this episode of the Digital Disruption Podcast. We hope you enjoyed our deep dive into the world of digital transformation and gained valuable insights to help navigate the ever-changing landscape. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach us on our website, esense.com, or connect with us on social media. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and stay tuned for more exciting discussions on the forefront of digital innovation. Remember, the future is now, and it's time to embrace the power of transformation. Thanks for listening, and until next time.